The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
What say you, Richard Pellick Murdoch? Are you guilty or not guilty of the felonies wherein you stand indicted?
Not guilty.
How shall you be tried?
By God and my country.
The exact time when Paul and Maggie Murdoch were murdered.
At the end of the investigation, it was obvious.
I'm not here to work with them. Okay?
And the whole point is to have this not fall into the wrong hands. This case is unique, it's unprecedented in South Carolina history.
So bad.
When you asked the defendant about the traumatic picture that he saw of Paul and Maggie, what did he say?
It's just so bad. I did him so bad.
I did him so bad.
Yes, sir.
Well, that was the defendant, Alec Murdoch, talking to some detectives in the car on his second statement. We're on day 6, week 2 of our trial. We are live coming to you tonight for our podcast, Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch's Murder, Money, and Mystery, our daily recap with our exclusive legal analyst and former South Carolina Attorney General Charlie Condon, executive producer Drew Tripp off camera, and Maxwell Harrison. He's keeping us all straight this evening. So we're just going to have to jump into this. This was this explosive comment that was made that is blowing up Twitter. It's got everybody talking about it. It's certainly a water cooler moment. What exactly happened there?
Well, I'll jump in. Hi, for those who can't see me, this is Drew, the executive producer, talking. It was really a point of contention, especially with all of us sitting in the media room watching along on this trial. They play a video. The defense has been playing a video of the second interview Alec Murdoch did with Sled, right? This is June 10th, I believe, days after the murder. This is the second time Sled is interviewing him. And in this, they ask about, you know, what Alec saw that night when he came to the kennels, the dog kennels where the murders had happened. And one of the agents is just saying, you know, I know it had to be tough to see that. And Alec breaks down, starts crying, and he says, it's so bad. I did him so bad. Or did you hear what I heard? And which is that Alec said, they did him so bad. Now, in court, they had Jeff Croft, the sled agent, testify to what Alec said. Creighton Waters, the prosecutor, stops the video that they're playing, ask Croft to say what Alec said. The sled agent testifies, Alec said, I did him so bad. That's not what a lot of people heard. A lot of people, there's a lot of contention around this. Did Alec say they or did he say I? On the record, in court, under oath, that sled agent testified that Alec said I, not they.
Yes. So, and
Charlie, how's this going to affect what's happening?
There's a lot happening here. We're going to hear from the defense tomorrow, I'm sure, on this. But as you recall, defense attorney Griffin objected to the sled agent saying or testifying to what was in the audio tape or the videotape on all counts. I think they did it 3 or 4 times. And Judge Newman, the argument by the state was that, well, this sled agent was there. He's party to the conversation. He can testify to what was said. And so Judge Newman did overrule the objection and allowed it in. I'm certain the state, the defense tomorrow, is going to renew this objection and say this is exactly the problem that we were worried about, that you have someone interpreting what is on the tape. And I must say, if you listen to it, and I've listened to it a number of times, you could hear both words in there, couldn't you? And I do think wisely the state didn't use this in an opening statement. They're not relying upon this as a confession. I think that's wise because there's a motion there, and we'll just have to see where this goes tomorrow. So stay tuned for tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there was a different feel in the courtroom today. It was the largest crowd I've seen since mm-hmm. we've been there. And I also noticed it was a smaller group there for Alec, but they were tight. And they were emotional. Yes. And there was a lot going on the Murdoch mm-hmm. side. I saw, just to set the scene a little bit, John Marvin Murdoch, his brother, was there. He actually had a very protective arm around Buster. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that?
Father figure to Buster.
Especially as they were talking about some mm-hmm. of this second statement that Alec Murdoch gave. And also, Buster was leaning in pretty hard, mm-hmm. listening. I saw Brooklyn, his girlfriend, crying. I saw Lynn getting upset at times. So there was a lot of emotion there. As far as where this takes us tomorrow, anything you want to add about that statement as far as whether or not it was I or they? Do you see it really being resolved, I guess, before the jury has to make a decision about this?
I made a point today on Twitter following along with this case that you can't be putting a ton of stock into a single person's testimony, a single effort by a prosecutor or a defense attorney on any given day. At this point in the trial, that's
excellent point.
That's a fool's folly.
That's an excellent point.
It's a folly to try and
very good point. Say there's so much information flooding in right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we've already been tripped up by it a couple of times.
But
for sure,
this feels like a huge point of contention if the state tries to make more of this than they did. And it also feels like if the prosecution goes after it tomorrow, they could really make the state seem, I don't know, I don't want to say. If the defense goes after this point tomorrow, they could really, I think, make the state seem, is untrustworthy the right word? Or unprepared? If they don't know, if it sounds like, if you put 10 people in a room and 5 hear I and 5 hear they, what is the jury going to be like? And how does that play out a week and a half from now when this trial gets to the conclusion? Again, that being the point, I don't know that one day or one specific thing, it's the mountain that you build. It's the house that you build over time mm-hmm. is the case.
The rope.
Agreed.
The rope, as Charlie says, you got to have every thread has got to be
I think
nuts.
Where we're going I think the analogy that works well is a rope, that you have these strands, and one strand's not going to be strong enough to overcome reasonable doubt, but you get 2, 3, 4. There were some pretty strong strands coming in on behalf of the state. Oh, yes. The defense made some points, though.
Well, let's talk about the cell phone evidence, because that was the next one that really stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it on our 6 o'clock story as well. Max, can you play that for us?
And does it show an incoming call from Paul Murdoch to Rogan Gibson?
Yes, sir, it does.
And what time is that call?
8:44 p.m.
So that's Paul Murdoch. They're saying Paul Murdoch had actually called his buddy Rogan Gibson about a dog that was in the kennels and there was a problem. I think there's going to be a whole nother layer of this as well. We're expecting to hear about Snapchat video coming up very soon about the same dog. We are going to have to see, like we said, we can't guess. Mm-hmm. We're not here to guess what they're going to do next, particularly, or speculate. But right now, here's what we know. We know that Paul made a call to Rogan at 8:44 p.m. At 8:49 p.m., Rogan sends a text back, and that text goes basically unanswered by a young man who is known to send texts and Snapchats and constantly on his phone all the time. Even his dad in all of these statements has been talking about how Paul's always on his phone. There were 5 more calls from Rogan to Paul after that, missed calls that went all the way into 10:08. Rogan tried to reach out to Maggie. Mm-hmm. So we hear, basically, between 8:44 and 8:49, there is nothing answered after 8:49, which means trouble could be afoot. I think that's what they're saying on the state side. We also know that so far, what we've heard in the opening statements was that Alec Murdoch was still on that property, mm-hmm. that he was at 9:06 was when he left mm-hmm. in the truck. Mm-hmm. So that's very concerning. Why didn't he hear something or smell something? We're talking about major ammunition going off, a lot of bullets flying. I'm having a hard time painting a picture where you wouldn't walk outside and see a billow of smoke, ammo, gunfire, anything. I mean, is that reasonable?
Yeah, let's talk about the weapon, too. They did put into evidence, and there are a number of firearms that are now will be in the jury room when they deliberate. And that weapon, that semi-automatic weapon, to my way of thinking, it looked really mean and nasty. It had a look, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, that rifle.
Yeah, and so for that to be going off while he says, in effect, he's napping on the couch, and we believe the state will be able to show that some sort of social media interaction from Paul would show that Alec was back there at the kennel, and he was very cool, calm, and collected on the interview.
Or at least, like, hearing him. I think that's what we've heard, is that we might not actually, we haven't seen the Snapchat video yet, but so, I'm hearing that because he was just kind of showing the dog.
So he didn't know he didn't know that was going off. I see.
But
so,
we don't, once again, like, we're speculating. Okay, we're speculating.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
but the point
bit,
being,
yeah,
they wanted to make sure that the jurors understand that he's committed himself to being at the house and not at the kennels, which would be, what, 1,000 feet away, something like that?
I think I've heard several hundred yards, maybe close to a couple tenths of a mile. I'm not remembering that right off my hand, but yeah, the point there, the defense made a big point of this today. And to your point, Charlie, about earlier, the defense and the state made a point today about this, but Creighton Water for the state kept stopping and having the SLED agent Croft repeat what was said on video, and just to make points. And one of the things that he had Croft stop and repeat was the fact that Alex said, the last time he saw Maggie and Paul alive was when they were at dinner. And we know for a fact from pretrial motions, there is a video taken approximately 8:44 p.m. that shows, according to pretrial motions, Alec in the background at the kennels during that time. Alec said he never went down to the kennels that night. And these are in his statements to SLED right now. So,
yeah, defense is a huge problem right here.
That's a very incriminating.
This is a big hurdle for them. Well, and then let's listen to a little bit more about the gun evidence. And we'll get into a little bit about what Alec was talking about in this video as well. Let's go ahead and play that clip.
Know the specific brand and make and caliber of ammunition that was used to kill Maggie Murdoch.
The head stamps on the shell casings at the crime scene was S&B 300 Blackout.
Same thing?
Yes, sir.
So there was a lot of talk today about shell casings.
Were there?
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Let me walk through that if I may, because I think that is another really strong strand of evidence, potentially. I think it's sitting right there. Hear me out on this because it's a bit complicated. But they made a big point today of showing shell casings. That is, the weapon had been fired, and there were some older shell casings, like stamped into the ground, had dirt in them, that obviously had been there by the residence as it left. There was a brick patio that left the gunroom area of the main residence. Then they went to this shooting house, as they called it, and it was way far away, used to sight rifles and other things. And there were shiny casings of this BlackRock 300. Blackout 300. So I'm thinking where they're going with this, and we know in pretrial motions that they had an expert say that those shell casings at both of these areas match the casings found by Maggie Murdoch's body. And so we've got three semi-automatic rifles. Drew, you won't want to pick up on this because this gets a bit confusing, but there are three separate rifles floating around in this case, semi-automatic.
So we'll back up first to the pretrial motions. What the state is going to allege and what the defense in pretrial motions tried to get thrown out and were unsuccessful in doing so was testimony by a forensic expert saying the tool marks, the machine marks, that basically the impressions and scrapes and scratches and scuffs on the metal caused by the unique signature to each gun. They're going to argue that the tool markings on the shell casings collected from the crime scene for these 300 blackout ammunition cells collected from the crime scene, they're going to argue the markings on those shell casings match old shell casings collected from the property, meaning they would have been fired from the same gun, and that gun was on the Murdoch's property at some point.
Right, right. And to my finer point, I think what they're going to argue further is that the older casings were there for a long time that match, and the newer ones match. And the defense is going to say, well, there might have been several rifles out there, but one's missing or one's stolen, and the alleged shooter had this rifle. But the problem they've got with that is you start thinking about this, and I think this is why the state is really emphasizing this, is if that is in fact correct, what a happenstance. Mm-hmm. The rifle that you say has been missing for a long period of time, or how long has it been missing? It couldn't be missing that long because the shell casings in the shooting house were clean. They were shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, I would think something like that would tarnish in a matter of months, if not weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones by the house are old and stamped into the ground, been there maybe for years. And so they've got a real problem with that one because the happenstance of someone coming across this rifle, and the more logical explanation, I would believe, is that he used it and threw it in the swamp somewhere, and that's why it's missing.
And so to expound on that, what Charlie's point is, we heard testimony today. We heard on this video of this second interview with Alec. Mm-hmm. Charlie goes, or I'm sorry, not Charlie. Alec,
I didn't do it.
I apologize.
I have an alibi.
Alec starts explaining the background on two 300 blackout rifles that he purchased, one for Paul, mm-hmm. one for his older son Buster, several years ago. Mm-hmm. I still didn't catch the exact year when they bought him. Mm-hmm. But I know this, that we do have a firm timeline for when Paul's 300 blackout rifle was reportedly stolen.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 2017 because that's when they replaced it. Alec says he never reported this rifle stolen because this was a whole thing they went into today. Paul was irresponsible. Alec had a quote about Alec in the video had a quote about Paul would leave clothes, guns, even his dad's boats. He would leave them strung out all over the state. That was when Sled was asking him, like, what was your number one issue or problem with Paul as a father? And Alec said due to his ADHD, he was very irresponsible. He didn't take care of things. He left things everywhere. He left guns down at the kennel.
Well, this is exactly what he said. I'll read the quote to you. He said he would leave anything anywhere and it would not be unusual for guns to be one out there. They told me, this is Alec speaking in his statement,
mm-hmm.
A 300 blackout was used in this. I can tell you that 300 blackout, it was not out there. He didn't have it out there on Monday, no.
So backing up to that point,
right.
2017, Alec says Paul's 300 blackout is stolen, and he made the differentiation. There was a black 300 blackout, a black in color mm-hmm. rifle, uh-huh. and there was a tan in color 300 blackout rifle, which was Paul's. Paul's goes missing. Alec says on camera in this interview, we purchased one to replace it. And he was confident. We replaced that rifle.
Mm-hmm.
We replaced that rifle after mm-hmm. Paul's was stolen. And that would have been in 2017. And then he takes a long pause. I wish we could have this pulled up. But Alec takes a long pause after saying that. And then he goes, well, you know what? Actually, I think that third one we bought to replace it, it's missing too. And the murder weapon is missing.
Right.
Right.
The original rifle that Paul had is missing.
Mm-hmm.
There's three 300 blackout rifles encircling back and coming full circle in Charlie's point. There's three rifles. Only one of them remains. And Alec talked about how.
And I should mention, by the way, because I think the most recent developments this afternoon really stepped on the defense's arguments this mm-hmm. morning. We should really point out that they were able to prove through the state's witness that the physical evidence is consistent with one shooter, but it's also mm-hmm. consistent with two shooters. They scored a point on that. And also the crime
Absolutely.
Scene was contaminated a bit.
We got lost in all of this mm-hmm. new information mm-hmm. coming in. And that's absolutely right, Charlie. Mm-hmm. They said they looked at the angles of the guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the state did come back with a plausible answer for it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
at the top, When Dick Harpootlian went after Agent Worley on where the guns were measured, it was really interesting to hear the angles and how far away there were a couple of angles for mm-hmm. these guns, which would have, mm-hmm. and she basically said, right, that
yeah,
they,
and she
they
also
wouldn't
pointed
be able
out,
to
yeah,
out,
and, yeah,
rule out
right,
a
and
second
right.
shooter, which,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that was important. And remember the back and forth on that too. And when the defense, the state then argued, well, it was stippling, it was a close shot, and you have what they allege would be human blood and debris on the nearby off-road vehicle, ATV. But then remarkably, the defense was able to point out and prove that, wait a minute, you didn't take samples of that. How right. do you know that can't be deer blood? So there, again, I think it's going to be stepped on with the reporting in general, but they made some points this morning that were valid.
Well, the other one that stuck out to me was they were talking about an impression on the back of Maggie's mm-hmm. calf that was mm-hmm. never documented once mm-hmm. again.
Yeah, the photographing was off.
And that was disturbing a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. it could have been dirt. Mm-hmm. It could have been an impression. Mm-hmm. We don't know because mm-hmm. it wasn't documented.
Right, right.
It, you know, yeah. and that's a problem because yeah. it was it somebody that actually stood on her calf when they shot her? Mm-hmm. Is that what they're trying to say?
Yeah, and that to echo both of your points, the defense really took this SLED agent, Melinda Worley, and SLED to task for how they handled that crime scene. You know, mm-hmm. Melinda Worley was sworn in on Friday as an expert witness on tire markings mm-hmm. and shoe print markings. And this expert on tire and shoe print markings, while she was at this crime scene, did not see to it that SLED's protocol for how to properly and accurately document footmarks and tire marks for comparison, she didn't see to it that all that was taken care of. And like some of these photos of shoe prints in the feed room where the bloody shoe prints, which have been deemed to be Paul's, with the muddy imprint on the back of, or the muddy mark on the back of Maggie's leg or some of these shoe prints, the state or the prosecution was able to prove that SLED's own protocol wasn't followed while they're out there. Mm-hmm. So that was really tough on them this morning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, we have to get to one more thing that was just, you know, we all went, what? One point, the Gucci receipt, there was a credit card statement from what I understand that had a Gucci amount of money, over $1,000 that was spent at Gucci. It was circled. And then they found it tossed in the trash can when they were going through the waste paper baskets in the back in the kennels, right? Or in that area. And that was something that they testified to. Is this part of what are they trying to do here, Charlie?
This case has everything. And as soon as I think that, then it has something else. And that was another moment. A retrieved credit card statement, a receipt with Gucci circled, was found mm-hmm. in the trash by the SLED agent
and
investigating.
And wadded up and thrown in the trash. I mean,
But I will say this: it's clear that the state thinks it's going to be part of the strand of their rope that right. they hope overcomes reasonable doubt.
Yeah, the defense didn't get to really get back on that one.
And that makes you wonder, did they plant it as a seed, or was it just a tangent that they just threw out there?
I feel like the fact that he emphasized that there's going to be some other information coming in relative to shopping, and I'm assuming it's the Gucci store in Charleston, because I don't think there's one in Walterboro, right?
So I think that's exactly right. I think
so. We'll see where that goes. You know, next couple of days, or I don't know. This case could go on for several weeks. I suspect we'll hear about this again.
Well, and I think it's also because it was like talking, leading into the idea that there was a lot of financial troubles going on.
Amen.
We're
yes.
all aware
right.
of it,
yes.
but we certainly haven't introduced this to the jurors mm-hmm. yet, and we don't know how much can mm-hmm. be. So that mm-hmm. may be a way for mm-hmm. the state to start planting the seed, as you said.
Yes.
What are we going to see tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow, I think the alleged, let's call it what the state, I mean, the SLED agent, he's trying to make it a confession, right? That
right.
I think if that they try to do that, they're overselling here. I think it's wise, again, not for it to be in the opening statement. I think it's a interpretation of the SLED agent of what was on tape there. And to me, if I was going to make that a big point, I'd have some sort of expert that would sure. testify to it. So I think the defense is going to open up on that. And there's a lot of information that came in also through that witness today that I'm assuming that they're going to have a theme on how attacking it. Again, I think the point here is, and we need to remember the basics here, the burden is upon the state of South Carolina to prove each and every element of each and every indictment, the four indictments, beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the standard. It's not beyond any possible doubt, beyond any reasonable doubt. So the defense is trying to make reasonable arguments as to why there are reasonable doubts here that this defendant, that the state is not meeting its burden. The defense did introduce evidence minor sort of South Carolina point, but under our procedure, once the defense introduces evidence, that means they can't close in closing arguments. So they're giving that up. It's not much to give up, really, in a way, because I think they do want to present evidence in their case. But this tells me this case is going to go on past the state's case.
Okay. Drew, as far as tomorrow?
I agree with Charlie. I really don't think the state can stand its ground on that issue of whether he said I or they. I think that's
sure.
We'll see tomorrow, and mm-hmm. I do expect a full fledged assault on that by the defense tomorrow, because they have ears, and they heard what there had to be that dissension in there too, and I'm sure that they're paying attention to the social media sphere and the chatter around the courthouse from everybody else who was there too. If they're smart, they're going to go after it. I think
low hanging fruit.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see what else the state brings out tomorrow and how they further their case, because we've got a lot of, like Alec mentioning the fact that other gun might have been missing too.
That's a good point.
Little things poke holes in his alibi.
That's a good point. I think we're into the meat of the state's case. I feel like it's a very meaty part, and they intend to keep the strong evidence that they have going the next few days.
Yeah, this is going to be an incredibly interesting next few days too. We're live in Walterboro, South Carolina, for Alec Murdoch's double murder trial, and we are going to be taking this live from here on out until we get a verdict. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, gentlemen, and we'll see you tomorrow.
My pleasure.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.